What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Tariq Elite Radio Show, and I am your host. My name is Mr. Tariq Elite, also known as Tariq Nasheed, also known as King Flex, and we're broadcasting live right here in Los Angeles, California, and we're going to chop up some very good game on today's show, as we always do. When do we not chop up good game? We're not going to take any calls. It's just going to be straight game all the way through. A lot of stuff I want to talk about. We're going to talk about this current trial, the Michael Dunn trial. We're waiting on the verdict of the trial right now. That's why the show was delayed a day, because we're still waiting on the verdict. And we don't know when the verdict is coming in, so I decided to go ahead and do the show anyway. I wanted to do the show after the verdict so people could call in. But we're going to discuss that, and we're going to discuss a lot of other things. Since it's Black History Month, we're going to keep a Black History theme going. And the game is going to be hot, so y'all stay tuned. Right here on Tariq Elite Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Imperial Hustle Entertainment. Now, they give great independent media for urban culture. Check out their magazine that's geared towards models, music artists, and entrepreneurs. It's a perfect, affordable publication for music artists to get their music heard. Their publications are available throughout Southern California and select locations nationwide. Find out more by going to imperialhustle.com or call them at 619-866-4792 and connect with them today. That's imperialhustle.com. Do you want to get some real good game by this generation's version of Iceberg Slim? Well, you need to check out my boy Boss Hog Macaroni, also known as Kevin Derrick Gentry. You can get all of his books at Amazon.com. Kevin Derrick Gentry also offers one-on-one coaching and counseling for that good game. You can call him directly at 404-207-5640 or 1-800-235-0851. Or check out his website, BecomeRichFamousFast.com and XPimpTellsAll.com. Beyond Beauty Boutique. You need to let Beyond Beauty Boutique maximize the beauty in you, delivering the best in Malaysian, Brazilian, and Peruvian virgin hair. You can get top quality hair at an affordable price. Get 10% off and free shipping right now at VirginHairBundles.org. Again, that's VirginHairBundles.org.
You are now tuning in to the King of Game, Tariq Elite, on Tariq Elite Radio.
You better recognize!
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We're back right here live on the Tariq Elite Radio Show. And I am your gracious host. My name is Mr. Tariq Elite. Ready to chop up that good game with you, fam. And like I said earlier, we're waiting on that verdict in the Michael Dunn case. The case of him shooting Jordan Davis, and we're trying to see what the verdict is going to be down there in Florida. A lot of people, we're trying to see if the verdict is going to go like it should go. And the fact that it's 2014 and people are not sure if there's going to be a guilty verdict, that says a lot about our society and where we are. And we want to talk about that with the theme of today's show a little bit later. I'm going to get into that a little bit later. And because it's Black History Month, I want to keep a little Black History theme going on, because there's a lot of fuckery going on for Black History Month. And I said that at the beginning of the month. I've talked about that on Ustream. So we have to prepare ourselves for a lot of fuckery that's going on this month. A lot of people wait until, or have waited until this month, to do some real slick stuff, like that whole Zimmerman fight with DMX. That was canceled, by the way. I heard they might pick it back up. I don't know. But a lot of this stuff is timed around Black-themed events or holidays, just like they put out this picture of this white woman sitting on a Black woman chair on Martin Luther King's birthday. All of this stuff is very meticulously timed. And there was some school out here in California, they had a menu for Black History Month, chicken and watermelon. So people are making their little slick fuckery jabs, and you got to keep your eyes open to what's going on. And this is why it's important for Black folks to get a code. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. And we're still working on Hidden Colors 3. Shout out to all the people who helped us get together and put together Hidden Colors 3. We're putting up all of the producer's information on the IMDb website. That's the holy grail of all film websites. So we're putting up everybody's information on IMDb. So all my people, we're going to send out a Kickstarter email sometime this week to get information of all the people who became producers on the film. And also we're going to start sending out some t-shirts and stuff to people while we're still doing the editing of the film. And a lot of people, shout out to people who've been sending in music. A lot of you guys are asking about music and a soundtrack with Hidden Colors 3. And I'm very pleased by your enthusiasm, but you don't have to send in music. We're not doing an actual soundtrack for Hidden Colors 3. Because a lot of cats, man, to be honest, some of the music y'all sending is garbage. Not all of you. But we don't plan on having a soundtrack for Hidden Colors 3 anyway. But people, man, people are sending in music. And the way they're talking the music up, they're like, look, brother, hey, Hotep, brother, I got some music, man, that I want to send for Hidden Colors 3, man. It's going to really activate that pineal gland of the public. You understand me? It's going to really deal with the kundalini energy and break out your spirits and break out your root chakras and really elevate you to a higher plane, brother. Let me play a couple of tracks for you real quick. And then they play it and it sound like some shit like this.
It's something about the girl that just makes my head.
And I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Tell all them other girls.
I'll be like, nigga, take the
There's
turban off and strangle yourself with it.
This world,
but I digress, man. So again, we don't really need you to send in any music for Hidden Colors 3, man. I respect your enthusiasm, but we don't really need it, family. But I appreciate you. And again, family, you can get Hidden Colors 1 and 2 at HiddenColorsFilm.com. Now we're looking to have Hidden Colors 3 released in theaters around the country around June this year. So a lot of people are asking when it's coming out. It'll be out around June this year. So I keep you guys posted on that. You will know when it's out. Definitely you will know when it's out. All right. Couple of things I want to talk about. A brother came out and he's an NFL prospect. They said he's the first openly gay NFL player. I can't think of the guy's name. I forgot the guy's name, but if you guys look him up, you can find out who he is. I forgot his name, and I'm not trying to minimize the brother's significance, but I didn't write his name down. But he's an NFL player or an NFL prospect. And I heard, when I first heard the story, that it was the first openly gay or NFL player, a football player. Before I even knew his name or before I knew anything, I knew it was black. I knew it was going to be a black dude. And sure enough, when I saw the pictures, it was a black dude. And the reason why I knew it was a black dude, because that's the new thing now. A lot of times people will co-opt things within the black community. They will co-opt our struggle and use it for theirs. And I talked about that on the show before when that black basketball player, they were parading him around as a hero for coming out of the closet. And there's this whole narrative, and I saw a few websites trying to make it seem like he's brave because the black community is so homophobic and he's now embraced. Let me break this down, and I'm not going to get too deep into it because I talked about this before. This fake narrative about the black community being homophobic and all that, even if black folks did not like certain people in the gay community, which we really don't have a problem with anybody in the gay community. There's a couple of individual instances where people might use epithets, but black folks are not in a position of power to disenfranchise or prevent any black gay person from doing anything. So let's just be very clear on that. We can't keep a gay person from not getting a job. We can't keep him from getting married. None of that stuff. So I really take offense to this whole narrative that black people, the black community has somehow held gay people back. We really haven't. The reality is those in the dominant society have held a lot of people in the gay community back. Those in the dominant society, they're the ones passing those anti-gay marriage laws and a lot of those anti-gay bills. They're the ones doing that. Look, me personally, I have no problem with gay brothers and sisters getting married, buying homes together, doing whatever. Have no problem with it. I want you to do all that. You should. Nobody should judge you based on who you choose to lay up with. Nobody should judge you on that. Now, the dominant society, they've always had a problem with that. Especially though, see, the thing is, we're so used to seeing like the liberal white people like in Atlanta and New York and LA. But the thing is, the country is run by middle America. Most of the stuff dictated in this country is by middle America. And middle America doesn't necessarily mean geographically middle America. The thinking is the white people you don't see. For example, these white people who own these juries. You see white people like, yeah, with the Trayvon shirt and all that. But then when court is going on, you got the other white people in the courtroom letting people go free for shooting black folks. Those are the people who run what's going on in this country. So the thing is, black folks, we've never historically had a problem with those in the gay community. And this whole thing about, well, being black is the same thing and being gay is the same thing as being discriminated because you're black. A lot of black folks have a problem with that, but those in the dominant society who are promoting a gay agenda, they say, okay, we're going to co-opt that anyway, whether you like it or not. And we do have a problem with that because the struggle is not the same. It's simply not the same. It almost minimizes the struggle of African-American people. And again, we sympathize with the struggle of people within the gay community, but to say that it's comparative, that's disingenuous. Just by the simple fact that you being gay, you can go in the closet and choose to reveal being gay or not, shows that it's not the same. Because guess what, people? There is no black closet. You can't go in the closet as a black person and then decide to go deal with society when you get your mind right or when you're ready. You have to deal with it at all times, whether you like it or not. So that right there alone shows that the struggle is not the same. And again, that's not to minimize the struggle of gay brothers and sisters out there, but I just have a real big problem with this co-opting the black struggle, piggybacking off of it, and comparing it to the gay struggle. It's two different things. And this whole thing where they grab a gay black person and put them out in the forefront and then embrace him and make it seem like he's courageous because his own community would not embrace him. See, the thing is, the dominant society has no problem with a gay black man. The dominant society has no problem with a gay black man. You prefer that. Whenever you go around like businesses or whatever and you see a black male working, usually he's gay or effeminate. The gay black male is not a threat whatsoever. They will embrace a gay black man before a gay white dude. They have no problem in embracing a gay black male. So that's why they're parading these brothers around. They're non-threatening. So we got to just really look into that and see it for what it is. Because again, in the black community, and I talked about this before, you had black gay performers. You had black people in the civil rights movement who were gay. You had, during the Harlem Renaissance, there were gay writers and gay poets, people like gay comedians, Moms Mabley. She was a lesbian. People knew she was a lesbian. And we didn't talk about it publicly because it wasn't nothing to talk about. You didn't put people's business out there. But there were a lot of gay people within the black community, and we still embraced them. Even, you know, the whole disco phenomenon in the 1970s, that was really about the black community embracing white gay people and black gay people. But it was really about the black community in embracing the white gay community. That's what disco was really about, that whole phenomenon. See, think about it. The disco so-called phenomenon, going out clubbing, that wasn't nothing new to black folks. Black folks always partied and danced and went out on Friday and Saturday night. That's, man, we've always went to the juke joint. That was nothing new to us. So why was disco such a phenomenon? It was a phenomenon because it embraced all different people without judging them. People, you can come around the black community and come around the black clubs and dance to the black music and nobody's going to judge you. And when there was that big backlash against disco, it was those middle American whites who were throwing that backlash out there because they didn't like the airwaves being taken over by all the blacks and gays. That was their whole argument. So they did that whole kill the disco movement back in, I think, 79. They went to some baseball stadium and brought a whole bunch of disco records and ran over the records. It was a whole bunch of white folks who did that. Those middle American white peoples. So that was that anti-gay, anti-black backlash. So again, I just don't like the narrative that black people are somehow more homophobic and we're holding somebody. We don't have, but we're not in a position to hold anybody back. So we just got to be very clear on these terms. But I digress, ladies and gentlemen. Now let me talk about this Michael Dunn case. Now for those who don't know, Michael Dunn, he was this middle-aged white man down in Florida. There was he went to a gas station. There were a group of black teens who were next to him in a car. They had their music up too loud. He got into an altercation with the young man, and then he shot him. Now he's on trial in Florida, and people are trying to decide whether he's guilty or not. And I've been waiting on the verdict. I've been waiting on the verdict so I can really get into that. Hopefully the verdict will come down later on today. Then we'll be able to talk about it on next week's show. But what does this say about our country? This shows that black folks, we only get plantation privileges. Remember, man, slavery is not quite over. The dynamic from slavery is not really over. It's just been refined. And it has grown. Black people are still technically on a plantation. America is still a plantation, and the relationship we have with America is still a plantation slave owner relationship. Now, when you look at slavery and the relationship between blacks and the dominant society in the 1800s, you had the dominant society, you had black people who were enslaved, and you had a few free black people. And we still have that dynamic. And the free black people at the time, they were still at a disadvantage because many of them were scattered and isolated and they had no protection. And when you look at history and look at documents, black people who were free, they had to pay all types of taxes in order to live in certain places just because they were black. So they were almost taxed and punished to a certain degree, even more than people who were enslaved. And as we all know, after slavery, that's when black people started to get openly killed in this country. People like to kind of glance over Jim Crow. Jim Crow was almost just as worse as slavery, because now you can hang black people and string them up and nothing could happen to you. And that happened openly and legally up until the mid-1960s. Now it's more covert what they've done. Instead of letting the average citizen do it, they let the police do it. The police have been elected to do it. So now you can have a so-called legal precedent to do all the stuff that they would do during the Jim Crow era. But the thing is, we're living on a plantation still. And black folks, we get plantation privileges. And when you step out of the plantation and do something that you're not supposed to do, you get reprimanded for it. Even during Jim Crow, even during slavery, if a black person mouthed off to a white person, they could be killed because they were not minding their place. You're not being in your place. And that's what happened to Trayvon Martin. That's what happened to Jordan Davis. He got into an argument with a white man in Florida. He stepped out of his place. He forgot that he was not on the plantation. When you step off the plantation, you're supposed to mind your business. That's where that whole mentality comes from. And when I look at the trial, this Michael Dunn guy is very arrogant and snarky on the stand with this little smirk. You can see that white privilege arrogance in his face. And I like to refer to him as a suspected white supremacist. And that's the thing now. Black folks, we're used to getting labeled. They like to put that thug label on us. And the thug label, that's just a code word for nigga. I've talked about this before, and we keep hearing that thug word thrown out. The thug word keeps getting thrown out, and they keep redefining what a thug is. They really won't define what a thug is, but it's now a code word for nigga now. It's the new nigga word. And they don't have to prove what a thug is. They just throw that label on you without having to prove or define what is a thug. Like Richard Sherman, he was called a thug. What's a thug? Is a thug a criminal? So why do black people get called a thugs when they have no criminal record? So again, like I said, that's the new code word for nigga. And black folks are going to have to learn how to play the word game and utilize the words as well. And I talked about this on my Ustream show Sunday. One new word that you guys, a new term that black folks are going to have to start using now, because again, the dominant society, they're masters at words. And they keep throwing the word thug out, like thug music. See, when they keep throwing that word thug out, that criminalizes black people, no matter if you have a criminal record or not. They keep throwing these words out to create a stigma. So you got to learn that game. You got to play the word game too. And the thing is, because of the O.J. Simpson trial, you're not allowed to use race in the court no more. They stop that. And the reason why you see all these racialized cases of black people getting shot, the first thing that happens, they say, well, race, we can't say race is a factor. You notice that in the Trayvon case, in the Michael Dunn case, in the case of the girl, Renisha McBride, the girl who got shot in outside of Detroit. All of these cases, the first thing they say when it's clearly racially motivated, the first thing they say, well, we can't let race be a factor in the courtroom. You understand that? And the reason why they did that is because of the OJ trial. See, the OJ trial, that revealed a clink in the armor. See, the thing is, the country was so racist and racism built up to such a degree, the racism turned around and bit the dominant society in the ass. So many racialized incidents were going on and people were owning up to their racism and wearing their racism on their sleeve. You had brilliant brothers like Johnny Cochran who went and took that and utilized it against the dominant society. When they got the, for those who remember the case, they got the Mark Furman guy on court and they revealed that he was a racist and he was the lead detective and OJ was acquitted. Ever since that case, they've been working vehemently to figure out what they did wrong. We can't let this happen again. We messed up. We can't let that happen again. So we're going to have to revise laws. We're going to have to revise strategies. And they've been working on that for the last 15 years to make sure something like that wouldn't happen again. We got to tighten up who we get on these juries. We got to tighten up where we get the jury pool from. You dig? They're masters of that. So ever since the OJ trial, a lot of these cases will not let race be a factor in the courtroom, and that's by design. So now we pretend that these incidents aren't racially motivated when we all know they are. See, the dominant society understands this. They know it's racially motivated, so now their whole thing is, okay, well, since it's illegal for us to be racist, to be openly racist like we used to be, we won't say we're racist. So now you got to prove that we're racist. And it's very difficult to prove that somebody is a racist. Because you can't prove what that person is thinking. Now, their actions, people know how to utilize certain actions and utilize certain code words. Again, that's where that thug thing comes from. Because now they can say nigga without saying nigga. You can say racial terms without getting in trouble saying it. That's the whole new game. So black folks got to really move your pieces on the chessboard. See, that's a chess move. So whenever somebody does something, they go accuse a black person of something or discriminates against a black person, you say, hey, man, that's kind of racist. Oh, really? Prove it. Prove I'm a racist. It's that whole thing now. Well, the thing is, black people, and I talked about this on my Ustream show, you're going to have to acknowledge some of these people who have racist actions. You're going to have to acknowledge them as suspected white supremacists. And that's a new term that should be introduced into the lexicon. When you see people do certain things that looks historically racist, simply refer to them as a suspected white supremacist. Like this Michael Dunn guy. he's a suspected white supremacist. Now, some people will say, well, you can't prove he's a white supremacist. You're absolutely right. That's why he's a suspected white supremacist. If Jordan Davis is a thug, well, he's a suspected white supremacist then. And we have more proof that he's a suspected white supremacist, or we have more of a hunch that he's a suspected white supremacist. Who's suspecting him? We are, in the black community. We suspect him. You can do that. So a lot of times, whenever you hear somebody use the word thug in relation to a black person, and I mean any person online or any news reporter, you need to call that news reporter a suspected white supremacist, because that's a term that white supremacists use for African-American people. They should be called out. A lot of these reporters, there's a crime involving a black person, they start throwing the thug word out. These thugs are accused of robbing somebody. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Reporter, sir, but the term you just used, many white supremacists use that term. So I'm going to assume that you're a suspected white supremacist. Oh, no, I'm not. You may or may not be, but right now I suspect you. So you're a suspected white supremacist. Start using that term, family. Trust me on that one. You got to play the game correctly. You got to play chess out here. And we're going to throw the name thing around. We're going to start doing the name game. Let's put some names out there. Let's put some real names out there and deal with some of these suspected white supremacists. But like I said, man, we are on a plantation, basically, still. Black folks are on a plantation, and we get plantation privileges. See, the inner city is really a plantation. The hood, the inner city, that's the biggest plantation. But the black community is basically a plantation still. It's controlled by outside forces. Black people do not control basically anything that goes on in the black community as far as business, infrastructure, education, pretty much nothing. It's not about not taking responsibility. It's just that it's been socially engineered that way. Black people do not control what goes on in the inner city or in the black community. That's why they can gentrify you and move you up out of there at any given moment. Now, we should be in a position where we do that, but again, we've been manipulated out of that position of control of our own communities, and that's something that we have to work on. But again, you have to understand what you're up against, because it's been socially designed to be that way. And because we are on a plantation still, the minute we step out of that plantation, we have to mind our P's and Q's. And on the plantation, back in the 1800s, as the plantation now, black folks are allowed to do certain things within the plantation, and there's a hierarchy in the plantation that's given to black folks from the dominant society. That's why a lot of black people get titles. On the plantation, black people got a lot of titles, and you got to utilize your titles only on the plantation. And even now, a lot of black people get titles, and they walk around with their chest out, but they can only utilize these titles within the black community or only around other black folks. See, black people get symbolic titles. Like on a job. A black person, and people in the dominant society know, if they give a black person any kind of bullshit title, even if it's a symbolic title, not even more money, but just a title that sounds like it might be authoritative. If you're a janitor and somebody says, hey man, you are an assistant lead custodian. Instead of saying he's a janitor, you are assistant lead custodian. That nigga will walk around with his chest poked out with pride because a white person gave him that title. Black people are very big on white people giving them titles, and they're very proud of that. And white people really look at that as an inside joke among themselves. That's always been an inside joke with white people, giving black people these titles and kind of laughing behind their backs at how they act and do a little cakewalk because they gave them a title. That's always been very prominent within the white community. And that happens a lot with sisters too. They do. See, there's this whole thing that a lot of sisters, and I'm not beating up on the sisters because I'm talking about black people in general, but they give a lot of sisters certain titles at jobs and certain job positions, and then you got sisters running around here, I'm doing so much better than all these niggas, I'm so successful, just like I talked about in that ABC special that came out a few years ago, all these quote-unquote successful black women who couldn't find men. That was a joke within the dominant society, because the thing is, black females, in many cases, are given plantation privileges. You're just given a better position within the plantation. Outside of the plantation in the dominant society, you're just as powerless as black men. So you got a lot of sisters out here kind of poking their chests out. I'm doing so much better than these niggas. Sister, you're on the plantation right along with us. They just let you run the plantation. They've always let the mammy run the plantation. When you look at slavery, the mammy always ran the plantation. With the backing of massa, but outside that plantation, you had to mind your P's and Q's. That's why the movie The Color Purple gave black people the blueprint of how to act. In The Color Purple, they had all the black men in the movie, real shady. A lot of the black men were just vile and disgusting, and you had the overbearing black females beating up the black husband, you know, the Oprah character. Perfect example. Oprah beating up her dude. She beat up Harpo and all this stuff, so she's whooping ass within the black community. But the minute Oprah's character, Miss Sophia, got into it with a white dude, I think she punched a white dude in the movie, was something like that, and then they pistol whipped her and threw her in jail for a long time. So that gave a lot of black women the blueprint. You can do whatever on the plantation within the black community, but the minute you step out of line with us, this is what's going to happen to you. So when we get these little titles, that's nothing to really poke your chest out about, because you're still on the plantation. And the fact that you have a title that you can strut around the plantation and wave around with, that's nothing to really be the cock of the walk about. Because these plantation privileges, that's just like being a trustee in jail. In the jail system, you have something called trustees. You have prisoners and you have trustees. Now, the trustees are still prisoners, but they get to walk around a little bit more. They get to serve food. They get to mop. They get to work in certain areas of the prison. They get to go from cell to cell. They almost have the same privileges as the security guards there. But at the end of the day, when it's lights out, the security guards get to go home, and the trustees has to get right back in another cell. So even though they get better privileges within the confinement, they're no better off than the other prisoners. And that's the relationship that a lot of black people have on the plantation and with the dominant society. Again, we're still on that plantation. And again, many black people, certain black people will learn how to move and shake and get out of the hood, but we're still isolated, me included. You know, I live in an area, I'm on my street. I'm the only black person there on my street. So I don't feel like I'm in an advantage. I live in a nice neighborhood, but I'm still technically at a disadvantage because I'm isolated. Just like with the Trayvon Martin situation, they lived in a gated community in a white area. They were isolated. Their son got killed, Trayvon Martin, and the killer got acquitted. So being in an isolated situation like that, anything can happen. You put yourself in a more vulnerable situation being a so-called free black person getting off the plantation. So the name of the game is we have to get a code. All of us have to get a code in order to get our shit right. But the thing is, man, a lot of people, especially black feminists, and that's another thing, and I'm not going to beat up on them too much because I always talk about them, and plus they're a non-factor. They're really a non-factor. But just in case there's some young ladies out there who don't know how much of a non-factor they are, and you start listening to their rhetoric, they'll pump you up to make you think that they have a desire to help out black women, and they don't. Because, again, they really want to get with massa. Their whole thing is to throw the whole black community under the bus so they can get nigger trinkets from massa. And what they try to do, a lot of black feminists, they will try to buddy up with white feminists and talk about plantation shit that white feminists are not trying to hear. See, the thing is, a lot of women, within the black community, you're allowed to say stuff like, well, these dudes got me pregnant, these niggas ain't shit. The dominant society allows you to say that. And that conversation is only valid within the plantation, within the black community. When you step out the black community, don't nobody want to hear that shit. And not just with the women, with the men either. When you dialogue with people outside of the black community, that nigga shit you talk around black folks, white folks ain't trying to hear that with black men or women. White dudes ain't trying to hear about no dude talking about his ratchet baby mama. No, white dudes ain't trying to have that conversation with you. And a lot of black women, when you get around white women, they don't want to hear about some five niggas to knock you up and they ain't shit. They don't want to hear that because what you're trying to do is sell them on the bullshit they sold you. That's why the white feminists don't really have black feminists coming around. They don't. You're not about to bullshit us with the bullshit we sold you. See, the thing is, we got to be very clear on how the game goes out here. Outside of the plantation, the shit we do just don't fly. Because on the plantation, you've been made to be dependent. You've been made to be childlike. And on the plantation, you're in a childlike position. So black folks get into the habit of talking about childish things or getting into childish activities. Bickering. Snitching on each other. That's a very common cultural pastime in the black community because that's a plantation mentality. Telling on each other. That's what children do. Fighting over petty, insignificant shit. That's what children do. Wanting to party all the time and play all the time. That's what children do. And that's the conversation we have. We gossip and play and use the internet to spread rumors and gossip and lollygag. And we get into childlike activity. And that spills over. It tries to spill itself over into the dominant society. And they're not having that. They're not even trying to engage you in that. As a matter of fact, you notice in the dominant society, a lot of times, people in the dominant society don't even engage black people in serious conversation. The conversation is very, you know, marginal and cordial at best, but as far as a deep, engaging conversation, they don't have deep, engaging conversations with a lot of black folks. And if they do, they're trying to pick your brain to get something up out of you, get some information out of you so they can co-opt it for themselves. Because again, we're still on that plantation psychologically and culturally. The plantation is real. Plantation has just gotten bigger because the country has gotten bigger. The plantation is bigger in relation to the big house. So again, we can't walk around getting little plantation privileges and walk around with our chest poked out because again, like I said, that's a big joke within the dominant society, and that's always been a big joke. And black people never catch on, and that's part of the joke. You never catch on to the fact that people in the dominant society are clowning you. They're making fun of you by giving you plantation privileges or little symbolic titles. They give you an insignificant title and just wind you up and watch you go, and black people never catch on. I talk about this in many instances. What's that school? Ole Miss College down in the South. When they were accused of being racist, they said, okay, we're not racist. We're going to hire a black homecoming queen. And they got this real big overweight black woman as the homecoming queen as a joke. And she didn't even get the joke. She's out there with her homecoming gown on and her crown waving in the car and all that, not even realizing they're making a joke out of her. They've always done that. And you know what? That tradition goes back to the minstrel shows of making fun of black folks. And you know, there are two types of minstrels. You had the Jim Crow minstrel, which is something we're all familiar with. That's where the term Jim Crow laws and all that, that's where that came from. The Jim Crow minstrel was basically white males would put on blackface and they would put on raggedy clothes and they would act like slaves. And they would be overly exaggerated with the speech patterns and they would dance and shuck and jive. That was the Jim Crow minstrel. But there's another minstrel that was even more popular than the Jim Crow minstrel, and most people don't even talk about it, and they don't talk about the significance of it, and they don't talk about the meaning of it. The other minstrel that was very popular was the Zip Coon Dandy. As a matter of fact, people, I want y'all to write that term down so y'all can study that. The Zip Coon Dandy. As a matter of fact, in the 1800s, there was a very popular song, a hit song called Zip Coon Dandy. That they back then, they would sell the songs on sheet music. But it was a very popular song called the Zip Coon Dandy. Now, what is that? Now, let's look at the word dandy. A dandy was a term that came out of Europe. It was a term that described a working class guy who dressed very nice and tried to act upper echelon. So that was a dandy. That term was very popular in Europe, and then it was co-opted over here in the United States. The dandy, well-dressed guy who was basically working class. And you had the Zip Coon Dandy. And the Zip Coon Dandy was basically white people making fun of northern black people. Because northern black people, what they would do, and even now, they would be made fun of for trying to dress and act like white people. So the northern black people, they would, you know, dress in nice clothes, but sometimes it would be overly exaggerated. Just like now, a lot of black people, in an attempt to try to emulate so-called white society, black men and women will try to go overboard. Sometimes a brother will have on a suit, but the suit will be extra loud. Or the woman, black woman, will get dressed all nice and have on a big hat and some blonde hair, just real, really over the top, very exaggerated. And that's always been a joke within the white society. Even back in the 1800s, the Zip Coon Dandy was a joke. They would get white dudes who would put on this black face. They would put on top hats. Go look at the minstrel pictures. It's usually a white dude in a top hat and a tuxedo. And a lot of folks didn't even know the significance of that. Why they dressed like a black person in very nice clothes? They were emulating the northern black people who were trying to emulate whites in their mind. And the joke was, they would dress up in these outfits of the Zip Coon Dandy, put on blackface, put on top hats, and then walk around kind of strutting and use words out of context, mispronounce words, indubitably. You know, they would use these words all out of context, and that was hilarious to the white society. The thought of a black dude trying to be so-called like white people in an exaggerated sense, but not doing a good job at it. The TV show Amos and Andy was based on the Zip Coon stereotype. The show Amos and Andy was a very popular radio show at first, then it became a popular television show, but it was about these black people who lived in Harlem who were businessmen. They dressed in their little suits and their hats, and they were basically almost con men to a certain degree. They kept mispronouncing words. There was one character, Kingfish, who was, holy mackerel, just making all of these real coonish, niggerish ass sounds and gestures. And that was the joke. These northern black people trying to fit in with society and be professional, but they were still niggerish in the process. That was the joke. And the term Zip Coon Dandy, the term Zip was a shortened version of the word Scipio. Scipio is, I think it's spelled S-C-I-P-O. And the word Scipio, they shortened it to Zip. So instead of calling a person Scipio, they said, hey, Zip. And Scipio Africanus, Scipio Africanus was a general in Africa who was a Roman general who conquered certain parts of Africa, and Africa is actually named after him. So that's the name of a Roman general, Scipio Africanus. And Scipio was a very common name for slaves back in the 1800s. Why was that name common? During slavery, it was a very common practice to give black people ironic names in order to make fun of them. Because black people were slaves, you would name them something ironic. It's just like getting a dog like a Chihuahua and naming it Killer. Or you got a pit bull and you named it Tiny. You would name it something ironic. And they would do that to black people as a joke. They would get black people, and because they were slaves, they would give them names of emperors. They would name them like Napoleon, Scipio, Hannibal. They would give them all of these names of generals and leaders like that. in comparison to their slave status. They did that to men and women. That's why you see a lot of, if you look at slave documents and slave narratives, a lot of black women were named Queen. That was an ironic name. There was even a movie about that. Halle Berry played a slave named Queen, who was a slave, and she was a mulatto slave, but her name was Queen. That was a lot of older black women, if you notice, their name is Queen, and that comes from slavery. It was ironic. That's the way of whites making fun of black folks. Even the name Leroy, you know, the word Leroy has been known as a stereotypical black name. That's almost like an epithet now to call a black person Leroy. Hey, look at Leroy over there. Why was the word Leroy, how did that get associated with black? Because slavery. A lot of people never ask these questions. They don't know the etymology of a lot of these words. During slavery, Leroy was a very popular name, particularly in New Orleans, places around those areas. Why was the name Leroy popular? Because it was an ironic name to name a slave Leroy. Leroy is French. Leroy means the king. It's French for the king. So you name a slave the king. That was funny to slave owners and overseers. Hey, what's your slave's name? The king. Really? He's the king. Hilarious. That was like a little inside joke with him. And that's still an inside joke where a lot of black people got these names from. These names were ironic. And that's been the joke, to put black folks in certain positions, even symbolically, and watch them try to get accepted by the dominant society, because deep down they know that's never going to happen. To see black folks try their hardest to show the dominant society that they're worthy, that's always been a joke to them. The woman who made the movie, or who wrote the book, The Help, there was a quote that she made. I think it was in her book, but she said something very interesting, and that stood out to me more than anything. She said when she was a kid, she would see all these black women dressed up in these nice suits and these nice outfits going to church and all that stuff. And in town, she would see all these black people dressed in very nice clothes. And she said she remembers feeling sorry for them. She remembered feeling sorry for all those black women who were dressed nice. And she didn't elaborate as to why, but I knew why. Because she knew that no matter how hard they tried, we're never going to fully accept them. She knew. She didn't want to articulate it that way. But that's the running wheel that they have black people on. We're going to keep you running on that wheel, and you're going to try hard. You're going to mispronounce the words. You're going to dress in these outfits, and it's never meant for us to fully accept you. And that's a tough pill for a lot of black people to swallow. That's a tough thing to admit. And this is why race relations, we don't talk about it realistically, because we don't talk about realistic expectations. We don't talk about owning up to certain things. We really don't talk about it realistically. That's why we're Hidden Colors 3. We're going to get realistic about race relations in America. And black people really need to understand the game, because at least those in the dominant society, they discuss race among themselves and they get a code among themselves. And that's the thing. Black folks have to get a code, not unity. Somebody tweeted me today, we need unity. No, the hell we do. We don't need no damn unity. Unity is nothing. You need a code. That's our thing. Black folks think getting a whole bunch of black folks in the room is going to solve a problem. It's not going to solve a problem. You get a bunch of black folks in the room, we're going to start fighting, because there's too much poison and hate that's been inundated in our brains. Need a code. We need a code to say, okay, look, this is how we're going to conduct business. We're not going to do this. We're going to do that. We're not going to do this. We're going to do that. We just need a code. We ain't got to be all up on each other all the time, because that's what we think. We think if we just group together, things are going to happen. You can get a whole bunch of people together, but if they do not have a code, if they're not on the same page, they're going to be ass out. Having a code and being on the same page is way more important than just being in a room with a whole bunch of folks with all types of different agendas. Because you get a bunch of black folks in the room, we get to talking about, again, childlike bullshit. You get a bunch of black folks in a room, and I look at social networking as an example. You get black folks dialoguing on social networking sites, the conversation is all over the place. You say, hey, man, let's celebrate Black History Month. Then you have somebody, we shouldn't call ourselves Black. We Hebrew Israelites. We shouldn't call ourselves that. We Moravovich or what? The conversation just goes all over the place. You can't even agree on what to call yourself and what religion to practice. And the conversation gets silly. Then they start talking about, what about women? What, y'all don't like women? It gets all over the place. And that's childlike bickering that we picked up on the plantation. So we got to have a code. More than anything, we don't get a code of conduct, nothing is going to work. No matter how many people you get in a room, if you don't have a code of conduct, it's not going to work. So always think about that. Get up off the plantation. Once you get up off the plantation, link up with other free Blacks and get a code of conduct with them at least. And it's time to get our minds right. It's time to get our minds together and get Hidden Colors 1 and 2 at HiddenColorsFilm.com, ladies and gentlemen. HiddenColorsFilm.com. Anyway, y'all, we'll check you guys out this Sunday on Ustream. Follow me on Twitter at Tariq Nasheed. Follow me on Instagram at Tariq Elite. I will holla.